Hello, this is Notes from a Native Daughter, and I am Soldanela. This is episode 3 with guest Jose Garcia.
Hi.
Hello.
I am Soldanela Rivera, and this is Notes from a Native Daughter, the podcast. Today, my third episode, I'm here with my good friend Jose Garcia, a performer, a writer, a musician, a singer, an interpreter, a researcher, and something that I'm going to ask him about is his experience with clown school. So I'm not sure how quite to credit that, but it's in there somewhere. and I think it's a vital piece of the puzzle. And he's working on a project about Davidita that I want people to know about. And he'll talk about it best. But for the time being, I'll pass it on to you, Jose. Welcome.
Hey, so happy to be here. Absolutely honored to be here, Soldanela. I love the idea that I've been invited to talk about Davidita. I feel very emotional about it because I'm very passionate about people spreading the word of re-evaluating the music of Davidita. When I've gone online, this is a man who started his career in 1930 and then faded off and then became popular again with Felipe Rodriguez in Puerto Rico doing duets, and then faded for a while and then comes back in the early 70s doing, you know, Christmas albums and Canciones de Protesta with Mario Hernandez. So just sitting here is, it's my dream being realized at this very moment. So I'm glad that I have stayed put and stayed on track to bring to light the music and the singing of this incredible, versatile singer.
Right. Okay, so let's go back because I jumped way ahead. How long have you been at craft, doing what you do as a artist or performer? I mean, I don't know how you categorize yourself.
Professionally since 1986, which means that I started with Pregones in the South Bronx, you know, the poorest congressional district in the United States. I was the first to enter the company with Judith Rivera, New York-born Puerto Ricans. We were the first New York-born Puerto Ricans in the company. Mm-hmm. But I have been singing all of my life, you know, I sang in glee clubs, and I fancied myself a singer after seeing this guy, Ralph Mercado, who had hair like David Cassidy. He was singing at a performance in my elementary school, Puff the Magic Dragon, and I got very mad sitting in the audience and wondered why nobody was looking at me. But I never imagined, and that was the first time when I was like, oh, I imagined myself as a singer, and that was it. That was the beginning of it.
Wow. So when you mentioned the name Ralph Mercado, what's the kid that you watched?
That was his name, yeah. This was another
just
a friend
like the
of
name
my
of
cousin.
A big producer
of Ralph
That's
Mercado
funny.
Who had I didn't my hair is, you know, Afro Boricua.
So right,
this
right, right.
It was those Boricuas with the
And so this
with
is
the 19, layers.
In the ninth early
this
80s.
This is 1973-74.
Cool. We're at the Bronx, Brooklyn.
This was in the lower east side of Manhattan. On Avenue C, what is called PS15,
yeah.
That was then renamed the Roberto Clemente School.
Right. And it's still
a
cultural center
today.
Okay, and so how was your path to Pregones, actually? Because we do share that in common, you know, we have them as family. And it's important in your trajectory as a professional.
Well, you know, I went to the LaGuardia School of Performing Arts, which is now located in Lincoln Center.
Mm-hmm.
And but then it was on 138th and Convent in Harlem.
That's a great area.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
So it was also those people who went there were very different as opposed to those who go there now. So a lot of like super rich kids definitely did not make that trip to Harlem, but there were a lot of progressive kids, in particular a lot of progressive Jewish kids. And it was the first time I had, and this was 1978, so it was the first time that I saw white kids in a school.
Wow.
Like it was a culture shock. Also the first time I took a train anywhere. I really didn't leave my area of what is Avenue C. And because I had had a great mentor in junior high, Gloria Lee. She was the first black teacher that I had because elementary you know, it was a segregated school. People know New York City, New York has the most segregated schools. So she changed my life and arranged this audition. And then that was it. All of a sudden, I'm singing classical music. I was doing theater. And then after that, I went to a conservatory in Princeton, New Jersey, called Westminster Choir College for classical. But I didn't. It's not like my boys right now who are so sure of themselves as Puerto Rican kids who know their culture. That was just never discussed. And I went through this period as an artist where I really disliked the color of my skin. I wanted to be white. I mean, that was it, which is how I acquired all of my early knowledge. I felt like I had to be better. I was of that generation that felt I have to be better than white kids, which is why I know thousands of songs and, you know, Italian art songs, German Lieder, jazz songs. I just drank it up. It was just my fire. So after I had flunked out of the conservatory, I was looking for a job at the National Puerto Rican Forum. And man, I believe his last name is Melendez. He was then the musical director of Pregones. And I was looking for a job, and he asked me if I did theater, and I said yes. And I told him the shows that I was in, but I neglected to tell them they were high school. He thought they were professional level. So I went to audition, and it was 1986. Why do I know that? Because the Mets won that year, the World Series, and they turned on the sound while I auditioned, as they were, of course, watching the Mets game. And I wound up being in Pregones, and I learned baptism by fire, like I learned by doing it. I literally got in just on the strength of my voice.
Yeah, and you're still in and out weaving.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So para siempre.
Right. Yeah. And what was the first production you did with them?
It was High Noon. High Noon. Mediodía, yeah.
And what was that about?
That was about union organizing. It was I played the character who wanted to, I think he wanted to go to this Met game, and I didn't want to attend this union meeting. So they're trying to, you know, gather folks so they can create a union. It was so funny, so amazing. And Rosalba and those guys were just so well-versed. And, of course, we were exploring that is bilingual theater. So we were, you know, there was still a lot of tinkering in the aesthetics of how that was going to be represented, and not saying something in English and then necessarily translating it into Spanish. But it was super exciting. But I didn't know anything about theater, honestly. Mm-hmm. Our first performance of High Noon, mm-hmm. we're about to go on stage. I'll never forget. I turned to the cast and I went, I never did this before. They did not laugh the way you laugh right now. They really went like a blank page. And
that's awesome.
And I was terrible. They would always say, you're underacting. And I didn't know what the heck they were talking about. It was terrible.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was it. And it was the first time I was around a group of positive Puerto Ricans in my life. I came from the Lower East Side. There was poverty. There was, you know, people living in segregated, you know, situations. And so here, all of a sudden, I'm seeing smiling Puerto Ricans who are sure of themselves, of their history, and that was it.
Educated.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I went to Puerto Rico the first time, you know, even though Puerto Rico always lived in my house, because my house was that stopover for Puerto Rican folks, for my mother's family, my dad's family. So I remember going for the first time, and it was just earth-shattering for me anyway.
Yeah. So how else were you earning keep as you were working with Pregones?
Well, early on, I also taught at the Johnny Colón Music School, which was in Spanish Harlem. Johnny Colón, who created, you know, what is called Boogaloo. And they had a school, music school. I taught voice and theory one. And I remember the best part of the gig was that every Monday we would get a pair of tickets to Salsa Meets Jazz at the Village Gate.
Wow.
So I would see El Gran Combo, Rubén Blades, Sonora Ponceña. Again, remember, at that time for me, I was, again, returning to this music that I hadn't listened to in a long, long time. Though I grew up, I knew a lot of those songs, seeing Héctor Lavoe. And I remember the first performance that I went to see was Rey Barreto. And I went, this is my music.
Yeah.
This is my, I own this. And that was it. I felt like that of wanting, the first time I was just like, okay, I feel very comfortable in my color. And now I'm going to fly. And so I started, you know, just reading about my history.
How does wanting to be, I guess, not dark work?
Here it goes. Are you ready? Here's the story.
Okay.
I still do. I'm not going to do it right now. But I do a really good Elvis impersonation. I was very into Elvis Presley. Wow. Still am.
Well, he's awesome.
And I was always have to defend him. Oh, he stole the music. It's just like, come on. He's an American guy. He's singing American music. It's
he's a great
as that.
Performer. Yeah, great credit performer. Where credit is due.
So I have a friend. His name is Carlos Bishop, who came from Guatemala. And I had no idea where Guatemala. Somehow we nicknamed him Tamale.
Okay.
That was his name, Tamale. And Tamale was my best friend in the entire world. And I was doing my Elvis impersonation. And Tamale said, man, Jose, if you were white, you'd be making a lot of money. Pause. Is the first time looking in the mirror. I remember it was earth shattering. I could not articulate it. I knew something was going on. It was just, I felt, in retrospect, was just like, wow, my friend was so smart. He was so intuitive. He saw that I had talent, but I felt like, oh, this is not going to be an easy journey. It's the only thing I thought. I didn't think about being Puerto Rican. It's just like, wow, this is really not going to be easy. And it became really, I was really blessed going to Pregones and that I didn't have to go to auditions that are non-traditional casting, that things just were written for me. I was in this company with these people who I saw every single day making a great living. But I remember for many years, especially like it hit me hard when I went to Westminster and Princeton, it was mostly with Southerners, people from the South. And we went to tour the South. And I had a solo. I sang an Aaron Copland song. And every time I sang that song, always, and, you know, salt and pepper, white person would come up to me and go, you remind me of Johnny Mathis. I didn't even listen to Johnny Mathis. Oh, my gosh. And what happened is that during that trip, we would stay at people's homes, people who went to these churches, because we performed at churches. And then we discovered a list that those people who were black had the letter B on the list, and those who were Puerto Rican were P, which meant that they asked these folks, is it okay if a Puerto Rican stays in your home? And I remember being so devastated, but I didn't have the framework. Like, if that happened to my sons, they would act from a, you know, point of power. But I was just flabbergasted. I remember I felt like I just went inside and that. And felt like I was in, I don't know, a stranger in a strange land for sure.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Alternate universe.
Yeah, it was an alternate universe.
So back to other ways, other projects that you did to earn your living. Because you've done a lot of teaching artist residency.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
Well, what's great is, again, another blessing is that, because I came out of Pregones, you had to learn how to teach. It was not a...
True.
It was no. So I was blessed in that it was my first professional job. So I had to teach. So I literally thought that every single actor, performer taught in their neighborhoods. I thought that was part of the deal that you just gave back. That was... You were invested. And I remember when I left Pregones, it was like, oh, not everybody does this. So I taught. So the first time I had to teach by myself, and even though I was teaching music, I was very afraid to teach theater. And we did a show called Remote Control. It was in Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut. And we did the show. And after the show, we would go the next day to give a workshop. And I was supposed to go with Alban. And Alban couldn't make it for some reason. He said, Jose, you have to go by yourself. Yo, I had a stomach ache. I did not feel well. I went on the trip. I went into the classroom. I did the workshop, and the teacher, because I always listened to teachers, I had many stories of teachers telling me stuff, and I always believed it. He said, Jose, you should bottle that. That was amazing. And I instantly believed it. And I was like, oh, okay. Just like when I was in the sixth grade and my mom, you know, being in the Lower East Side, and the assistant principal came up to my mom. She said, tell your mother that Jose, you're the best dancer in the entire school. He said, mami, ella dice que yo soy el mejor bailarín aquí en la escuela. I believed it. You know, some kids, you give them, you know, some props and they go, oh, I don't know. Teachers always, Jose, you can sing. I believed it every single time. It was never any, like, well, I don't know. I embraced it, so it was like that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
But then back again to the details. What are some of these shops? Talk about the clown school.
Oh,
get specific.
So, oh yeah. So this, it's teaching at what's called Camp Winter Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
It's Mendocino County. It's 3.5 hours north of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by Wavy Gravy. Hugh Romney, he was one of the beat poets at the time with Allen Ginsberg and those folks. And his wife, Johanna, was this actress called Bonnie Beecher. You may have seen her in episodes of The Fugitive. She was in the Star Trek episode where, the High Noon episode where they're like in this alternate universe. She was also in the Twilight Zone where this guy is trying to find this song. And she gave up her life. She was the girlfriend of Bob Dylan. She was this woman who would come to New York and buy records of black people. And what happened was I was going to direct a show called, it was a circus, related show. And Sandra Rodriguez happened to see this, thing on Nickelodeon. And they did a bit on Camp Winter Rainbow. And, I called him up and I said, hey, you know, I teach theater here. Is it okay if we have an exchange of services, if I take classes? And this was 1994. Is it okay if I take, you know, go to the adult camp, I take classes, and in exchange, I teach classes? And I've been flown out ever since. So
and how many years have
you? This is 23rd year.
Wow.
So my two boys don't know anything about summers in New York. All their summers they spend in California, because when I was in the Lower East Side, there was a big giant bus, and on it said Lucha, Camp Lucha, and they would pick up kids, not me, and I would watch that bus leave every day in the summer, and I had this like pain in my stomach. It's like, oh my gosh, it's leaving without me. So when I found this place, it was just, my kids are going here, and that's it. So
wow.
And so I teach what's called Theater Experimento. So I explore, you know, aesthetically songs. I teach collective creation, and they teach unicycling, clowning, gymnastics, stilt walking.
Important skills to have.
And even though I learned how to walk, you know, on stilts in the Bronx.
So, all right. Yeah.
During one of the Tenaz festivals many, many years ago that was held there.
What's the name of the camp again?
Camp Winter Rainbow.
Winter Rainbow.
Yeah, where the kids sleep in teepees.
Oh, yeah. I want to go.
Oh my! Even what I'm saying to you, it does very little to explain this space.
Like of course,
if you went
yeah.
There, you would
it's
just
always
go, oh
difficult
my.
To translate.
You know, yeah, it's one of those, and it's real hippie culture. That's for darn sure.
Yeah,
a real respect for the earth.
Just of course, gorgeous. As it should be.
Yeah, yeah, just beautiful, 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 and you know, my children are products of that place.
And so have you, like, made, like, cool costumes and plays over there?
Well, absolutely. There are things that I created out there. I remember Wavy Gravy gave me a book of poems by Martin Espada called Imagine the Angels of Bread. He said, here, Jose, I just saw him read, and I read it, and there was one part of the poem that said, this is the year when dark-skinned men lynched a century ago, returned to sip coffee quietly with the apologizing descendants of their executioners. And I was like, whoa. And I read it. He handed it to me. I read it right then and there standing. I was like, oh, I'm going to do a show of this. So I lo monté. I staged it. And then I came back and I did it. It opened up the second annual Hip Hop Theater Festival. And then I wound up doing a residency in UMass. With what then was called the Ruby Theater Company, which I had with myself, Jennifer Fleming, Alicia Diaz, and Amarelis Perez, Patricia Herrera. And it wound up being 3 years of doing this incredible show. So I treat the place like an artist colony. I create a lot of shows there, ideas, and then I come back and they become full blown here.
Wow. I'm like speechless. Mm-hmm. So let's, move into Davilita. I mean, I know you sort of condensed it, but there's more to it because obviously there's the, you know, who he represents in terms of the political landscape of the past 150 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically. And he's an anthem. And, you know, if we think of today and you know, the profound implications of the diaspora, you know, and I am very much a product of that, a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And so are you, right? And so this quagmire, and so I feel like culturally speaking, I understand why you got so emotional at the beginning, because we're holding on to something, right? Or trying to search to hold on to something.
And he, with my friend, with Sandra, we visited his widow in Bayamón, Puerto Rico. I mean, this is not, when I'm talking about that, I've been hanging on to this man for many years. I'm talking many years. We even thought of, you know, creating a movie around finding the last song of Dabilita. And so we went to visit her, and I remember we said, well, how are we going to find his, we went to Bayamón, and they said, how are you going to find them in the house? He said, oh, it's easy. It's a white house with a bandera, Puerto Rican flag on it. And we went, we visited, and there she was. She was so open. She was so amazing. Sure, and she had this beautiful, giant, like, sort of like poster board picture of Dabilita with Pedro Flores and Rafael Hernandez.
The giants.
The giants. And he, and Dabilita was the first to sing all of those songs. He put their stamp on them. He became, but that he started, why I'm so intrigued is that he started his career in New York, not in Puerto Rico. He was in New York. He was in Spanish Harlem. And if you hear, there's a certain edge of that asphalt of just being a stranger in a strange land. There are even songs that he sings where you can't go to a certain place because the Italian kids are going to beat you up and stuff like that. And he, because he was an independentista, because he was, it affected his gigs. It affected his livelihood. And his widow told me that he was supposed to sing at a Plaza de Mercado in Bayamón, and they wouldn't, not only because he was an independentista, but because he was negro, and he decided, well, I'm not going to sing here. I'm going to sing to the beach. And she said the entire plaza emptied out and followed him to the beach, and he proceeded to perform on the beach. That is Dabilita. And though he did a lot of political songs with Daniel Santos, it's important to remember that Daniel Santos was not living in Puerto Rico. He was living in Miami. He was in Florida. So Dabilita bore the brunt of, you know, you can imagine this, you know, U.S.-led, you know, terror. And he was that musician. He was there, but it didn't stop him. He continued recording and writing, you know, song. Fuera Yankee, go home. Fuera Yankee, go home. Who writes stuff like that?
Are you get arrested. Do it with your group?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
You know, definitely want to cover, and we're in the works of covering songs like that. And versatile. He was the only other singer other than him who was versatile like that is Danny Rivera. There's no other. He really is of that. It's so funny because even of the color and how they take. And I get really emotional because I'm emotional about people who have a fire that can't be doused with anything. And these people, you know, take the road less traveled. You understand?
Preaching,
you feel me?
Yeah. Fire over here.
So these people, you know,
God is my witness.
And then you meet them and they're just the warm. And you're like, wow, how do these guys get beat up all the time? How do these guys who music doesn't even get played on the radio, how do they keep smiling? How do you do that and not be bitter? You know, so I, you know, and I'm around them. I want to touch them. And, you know, I've taken the road less traveled. I'm the one that, you know, I've been offered to do stuff in Law and Order to play people, and I won't do it. I remember, and it always comes, historically, always comes moments when I need money. I remember I had to do something in Spanish, and I really hadn't read it. And then I realized it was about pharmaceuticals in Puerto Rico. I'm about to make big change, and I'm sitting there. We're about to start the take. I'm left alone. I'm like, okay, nobody's going to know that it's me. Okay, it's not cool, but I really need the money. The guy came back and asked, I got to go.
Wow.
I can't do this.
You did that?
Yeah, I did that.
Wow.
I did that. The same for like doing Carlitos.
They must have hated you.
Oh my gosh. He was very, very upset.
Banned from the franchise.
Very, 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 very upset. The same like when Carlitos Way came out with Al Pacino. That was another one. We had a friend, Nelson Landru, who went to the audition and he warned us about this script. And I got called because I had did a show where I got great mention. And I said, Jose, no, they really want to see you. And I was like, nah, man, I'm not going to do that. And they said, but it's with Al Pacino. And I said, F Al Pacino. I ain't doing that.
And when I say that, I don't lose sleep. I'm not like, oh, I hate people who do this. No, I'm not going to judge the person who takes it. It's just me. I'm not going to do that. But I ain't going to judge you if you take it. But
hashtag no judgment.
Hashtag no judgment. I'm just not going to do that. And I'm going to sleep really well. That's all.
That's funny.
Yeah. So doing Davilita, and again, this is a record, El Ayer Que Canta, that my dad, when he on weekends, when he would have his friends over, that record would play and they were just quiet. Absolutely quiet. They would just be listening to this record. So I'm going to flash forward. I go to this, I realize, I've got to find the record because I don't have a record. I don't have a recording of it. And I go to this sort of record convention that they had in Spanish Harlem. They didn't have it, but this guy says, I have it, but it's going to be $125. And I went, okay. So I met him. I got the recording. I played it. I sobbed because I remember all the songs. They all came back to me like a flash. And, you know, it's definitely you see this man and I can see myself in what he's laying down. And he's part of me. He's part, just like anything that happens in New York is part of me. James Cagney, you from New York? You part of me, bro. I'm part of that. I'm part of that. Barbra Streisand, you from New York? We're part of the same tribe, sister. Okay, I come from you. We all come from the same thing. So he just, and then I started buying more and more recordings. I was just like, wow, this is a monumental singer. This is not our, I hate when people say, like, you know, our Frank Sinatra, because you know what? Puerto Rico's
no, but the
Frank
comparisons
Sinatra,
are important.
But you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, they are.
But
I was reading somewhere, and this made a lot of sense, and that is that, you know, our Frank Sinatra is Frank Sinatra. Okay, but this is Davilita, Pedro Davila Ortiz, a giant of a singer who can handle guaracha, bolero, novelty songs, independentista, song, a composer. What's not to be drawn? What are you not to like about this man? You know?
I understand.
And then I decided I'm going to record this entire album again with new arrangements.
So which, talk about the songs you picked that
okay.
You produced.
The one that we produced is Angelica, Angelica Te Llaman, which also
is bella.
Which Ismael Rivera, you know, also covered famously. He does a great version. I remember one of the musicians from Bregones at the time, Ricardo Pons, we would have an argument on who sang it better, Ismael or Davilita. Which in a way, it's apples and oranges. It's just like, why are we comparing these guys? Let's just enjoy them. So we did Angelica. We did Pobre Gaviota, which was written by Pedro Flores, you know, pure, you know, poor seagull. And it's about Puerto Rico. And the governor of Puerto Rico, I think Luis Muñoz.
Marín.
That was his favorite song. And he knew it was about Puerto Rico and the sadness and about being sad, and he privately it's a well-known fact that that was one of his favorite songs. Another one that we did was Tiempos Viejos, which are a Carlos Gardel song, and just, you know how we Puerto Ricans take things and we turn them into something else. We can take a tango and then turn it into this Puerto Rican thing with Mario Hernandez. We covered that, and there are a lot more to come, a lot more. And again, because I love me some rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And also tapping into my collaborator, Jesse A. Meyerson, which is this Jewish kid from Washington Heights. And, you know, we've been intertwined, you know, Judio Maravilloso, Larry Harlow in New York, you know, in the beginning. Or Puerto Ricans, we've been in the beginning of rock and roll, you know. Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, why do fools fall in love? There are two Boricuas in there from the island, okay? Oh, when people hear Jeremiah was, that's Chuck Negron, a Puerto Rican Italian, okay? And for us, he's just Puerto Rican. But we've been in rock and roll since the beginning, just like in rap. So because I love rock and roll, I thought, why don't we give it up some muscle, some like rock and roll muscle? So that's, it's a rock and roll take on it, which comes naturally to us.
I see. And who's in your band?
Jesse A. Meyerson, which mm-hmm. is so funny because I met him at Camp Winter Rainbow when he was 11.
Mm.
And now we collaborate. He's part of my family. We've written a musical actually called Remnants, which was produced by the University of Richmond in Richmond, Virginia. Last year, it received a full production. We have Elvin and Edwin Cartagena. Let me go back. Part of forming this band and why it took so long, I really wanted it to be that the core of the musicians, the majority of the musicians, be Puerto Ricans from New York. Don't ask me why. I think it's super obvious. I didn't want any, I just wanted that, you know, it's like when you listen to, you know, Hector Lavoe, you know that's not from the island of Puerto Rico. I'm sorry. I smell asphalt on that. I see the, you know, the buildings, and you can smell the cigarettes in that room. So it took a while. So these guys, Elvin and Edwin Cartagena, are two gemelos, two twins from Allen Street in the Lower East Side. And we coexisted at the same time. And Urbano Sanchez, his percussionist, was just, yo, this brother is nasty. And I can't wait for people to find out this guy. He's one of those guys that hits the conga and then like flowers come out of it, like psychedelic 60s, because he has this touch. That's incredible. And then on keyboards, we have Jonathan Hardy, who actually, I'm a teaching artist at a school in Carroll Gardens, and he's the music teacher there. And he's the dong. I call him maestro. He's this older man. Trying to remember where he's from. You know, he's not from New York, but he's so disciplined. And he's one of those guys, you give him a song, and then next time you meet, he knows it inside out. So, and I love that there's somebody who's older than me in the group. So, and that's the band. That's us.
That's amazing. Wow. That's almost a story about the camp.
Yep. Absolutely. So now we're ready to explode with this music. And, you know, it's so funny, you know, music magazines, Brooklyn is really the center of a lot of music, independent music, but the majority, almost all of it is just white music. Mm. And those guys know how to promote themselves and just, but what we're doing is just like, yo soy un New Yorican de pura cepa. I love that I'm from New York. And I'm going to push you a bit back if you're not from New York. Puerto Ricans are excused because, you know, this is because of our history. So if you just came from Puerto Rico and you're here, you're cool. Okay, that's just a colonialismo. So we're like, good, good, you're here. But if you're coming from Indiana, Montana, you better watch out when I'm on stage. I'm going to bring it.
Why?
Because it's mostly all these bands are from out of town, man. They're not even from New York. What is that about? You know? And it's also, you know, it's the New York. And New York, what do? We meet people, we size up people, and when we go up on stage, we want to blow people off the stage. It's the attitude. Yeah. It's that flavor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's watching people who, you know, living here in Sunset Park, which, you know, I'm seeing slowly being gentrified, and people are walking around my neighborhood with their ears plugged in. It's just like, ears are plugged. You're underwater right now. You're not even taking in New York. There's a certain rhythm to this city.
Yeah.
You have to be listening to it. If you're covering it up, you're not in New York. I don't know where you are. You're somewhere else.
God, I remember when I would ride my bike all over the city for a long while and would ride over the 59th Street Bridge to Queens. That was intense. I recalled that feeling of knowing the city when you said that, when I was riding that. Mm-hmm. That bridge, mm-hmm. there was something so intense, and it was almost like you had to ride with the rhythm of the traffic, moving fast but slow.
Weird. It is. And New Yorkers, you know, people forget that New Yorkers are really nice until you slow them down. Then they don't have any patience for you.
That's true.
If you get in their way, then it's just like, ah! But they're really nice.
They are. I think New York gets a bad rep. But people are very nice indeed.
I wanted to mention also that my collaborator, Jesse A. Meyerson, he's the one that we sit down, we listen to the recordings, and then I go, Jesse, this is the way I'm feeling this song. Like we do a song, Arráncame la Vida. En esta noche de frío. And I go, you know, that's a Randy song. That's a very sexy song, Jesse. That's the way I'm imagining. And Jesse is just nasty. He takes it and he knows my voice. So he writes for my voice and he's just genius. He absorbs himself and he comes out with these, and he'll play me, okay, this, he'll say, this is what I come up. And it's always, it's right on, Jesse. You're amazing. And he's incredible. And he's also, he knows, I come from Larry Harlow. I come from, you know, this year, and that we go back. Puerto Ricans and Jewish folks, we go back a long ways. So for us, it's just a continuation and picking that up, and, you know, and feeding each other in that way. So
yeah, I know. That's great. I mean, how lucky to have that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, another thing that we have in common is the Cape Man experience. Our circles intersect. And I think that, I want to know how it was for you. I don't know that side of, you know, the experience that it was for you.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever learned that.
You know, what happened was I was about to go to this Camp Winter Rainbow, as I do. That's my ritual. And then I got a call for the audition. And I told my wife, what does this Jewish guy from, you know, Queens know about Puerto Rico? Because I ain't going to that audition. So I went to camp. And then I come back. And then they call me again for the audition. And my wife said, just go. She said, just go. So I literally bought Handel. I sang stuff from Handel's Messiah. I sang everything. I went to the, so, but before I go into the audition, I'm sitting down. And also when I found out that Rubén Blades was in, I was just like, well, if Rubén Blades is in it, you know, this guy, I respect him. I respect his politics. He's a Renaissance man. So as I was waiting to get into the audition, the band was just rehearsing right next door from the audition spot. And I heard the music and I went, I'm getting into this show. So I went in and, Milton Cardona, who passed just most recently, you know, he's one of the greatest conga players who, you know, when he joins Willie Colon, the whole band changes for the big break, La Gran Fuga. And I know this because I'm a big geek about stuff like that. So I started singing some doo-wop-y song from the Cadillacs. Gloria. And Paul Simon walks in and he has his back turned towards me and he's getting himself coughing while he's listening to me. And then he, Oscar Hernandez was accompanying, who's another savage, you know, come from the Ismael Miranda, one of the greatest
Latino, Oscar.
You know, who's plays with the Spanish Parliament Orchestra. You know, yeah, it's great. It was wonderful. So then he comes, there's like a little bit of a stage and he comes back up and he comes up on stage and he said, well, let's try something. Let's try this thing from this song. So he's, the whole time he's talking to me, the first thing I thought was, they're playing Mrs. Robinson somewhere on the radio right now. And he's talking to me right now. And Milton Cardona comes up and we start doing this thing. And then I leave the audition. And supposedly Oscar Hernandez says, you know, Jose, when you left the room, Paul Simon said, now that's a singer. And I got in the show. And it was amazing, even though there's that, you know, you still, like, you keep at a hand's distance because at the end of the day, it's not being directed by Puerto Rican folks. So you're waiting for the other shoe to drop because that's what happens to us. You know, and there's a whole history of that. But I love the experience. I did not never aspire to it, but when I was out there, I was like, oh my God, I'm on Broadway! And it was exciting like that, and I did it, and Paul Simon and the folks, they gave me a big hug. And it was, and all the people who were in the musician's pit, the orchestra, those were all guys who I have records on that you're looking at right now on my shelf. Mm-hmm. So I would just pick their brains and ask them about how do you do this.
Yeah, they had a great band.
Oh my gosh, Nelson Gonzalez, Milton Cardona, Oscar Hernandez. These guys, I get chills. It's just like, oh my gosh. And a lot of the cast members didn't know who they were. I'm like, I know who you guys are. So they gave me a lot of love because there
were a lot of generations too in the cast. So it makes sense.
Yes. Nestor Sanchez, is it Sanchez who we lost? Rey de la Paz was in it. He was marvelous.
He's
a beast. Yo, that's another versatile singer. He can that boy can sing R&B anything.
Rey de la Paz.
Rey de la Paz. I saw him, you know, with
that
Luis
performance,
Ramirez. You know?
My favorite performance of him was when Paul Simon had the retrospective at here in Brooklyn. Oh,
was
my
it
God.
BAM?
At BAM.
Uh-huh.
This is, I want to say 10 years ago, so fast. And they did the week for Cape Man, and Rey de la Paz sang the song Del Santo, Del Santero. Wow. That is memorable. Mm-hmm. Memorable.
Mm-hmm. There was, you know, but there was a lot of bad press.
No, I mean, I don't want to get into that. The whole thing was just awful. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, the music, I mean, in my opinion, a lot of, you know, the production stance, I love it. And the music is, in my opinion, undoubtedly, hands down, amazing.
So, Daniela, people who don't know, and especially Paul Simon lovers, los fanáticos, don't know that that is the best music he's ever written.
Well, I don't know about the best music.
Well,
I mean, there's
I won't say the best. It's adventurous.
It's a beautiful piece. It's a beautiful collection.
That's it.
And actually, the review for the show was really bad. Mm-hmm. And my colleague and I, we wrote a letter to this one reporter.
Was it the Times?
No,
I remember that. Can I tell you what the title was?
Oh, I remember
The Lure of Gang Violence to a Latin Beat. I'll never forget that. That was the New York Times.
And the opening sentence was something like, watching caveman last night, I'm paraphrasing, was like watching a wounded animal die a slow death. I've never forgotten it. I read that and I was like, WTF.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. But
you had that experience. It's an amazing, and you know, Danny like worked in and out throughout it all, collaborated and participated.
One of the first time when they played the music for us,
you know, the overlaps.
When they played the music for us, when the cast first got together, it was Danny Rivera who was there. I'm sitting there. I hadn't known him yet. And then he's saying, I was born in Puerto Rico. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is Danny Rivera right now singing to me. Yeah. Holy moly. Amazing. Yeah. Just great.
It was cool. It was a very nice time. A lot of nice people. Yeah. And
the time. It was that time of, you know, Ricky Martin, Living La Vida Loca. It was like all this Enrique Iglesias. I was in the midst of all that. I was that show was part of that wave at that time.
Yeah.
And Mark Anthony, Frankie Negron, you know, who was also part of the cast.
Yeah, when they were all, you know, becoming stars.
Yeah.
It's so cool. That's amazing. I mean, so that's what, like a 30 plus year career as a performer, actor, creative economy worker. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, I've got to tell you, I don't know how to do anything else. I don't know how to do anything else. I just don't.
That's your heart.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I do. And teaching is no doubt my calling. It is my calling. It is what I'm supposed to be doing. And moments when I'm just like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to continue. My oldest son would go, Papi, you change hundreds of people's lives. What if that's what you're supposed to do? Papi, that's just what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to perform and do this. So he's always the one that keeps it real for me. He's just like, oh, you're right.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you gave me this time.
Oh, thank you. It's so awesome. Thank you.
I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Daniela.
Thank you for listening to Notes from a Native Daughter. Follow us or listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Thank you.